Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah, standing there behind the counter, willing to help.
No, my, I don't like. Kia ora and welcome to our Books and Beyond Literary Lounge. This is your host, Alison, and I'm joined in the studio today by my colleague, Inika. Kia ora. Inika.
Oh, great idea.
Cook Island.
Kia ora for Cook Island Language Week.
So, kia ora and welcome. Good to have you back in the lounge today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Alison.
It's great. Hey, and we're going to talk today about what we're reading, of course, and then what's on our TBR lists.
Awesome.
And then I actually have a new curve to describe.
Ooh,
so something to look forward to, because, you know,
I've been missing the curves, haven't we?
I love a good curve. Hey, so now you've been reading something really interesting that you were telling me about.
Yes, I have. So this week I read Kim Ji-young, Born 1982 by Chu Nam-joo. This is a novel in translation, so it's been translated into English from Korean. And it came out this year, and it's available in our fiction collection and also an ebook and e-audio. But it was originally published in 2016 in Korean. So, yeah, there was always a bit of a lag with books and translation.
Yeah, there is, isn't there?
Yeah. But this one was a bona fide hit in South Korea. The book came out and it coincided with their Me Too movement, or in South Korea it was called the With You movement. This book was credited with opening up public conversation about the power imbalance that women had been sort of living under for a long time and had basically taken as read. So a really important book to read for us, and also, yeah, for Korea it was absolutely huge, South Korea I should say. This book, so Kim Ji-young, now this name in the title is sort of the equivalent of a Jane Doe kind of a name.
Right, yes.
And the way the story runs is really that it's a story of an every woman in Korea, but based on one person. So when we first get into the book, she's struggling with motherhood. She's back at home. She's got a much smaller world than she had, because she's had to give up her career in order to be a mum. And one day her feelings about her world having got so small start to spill out. Now, it's interesting. The way it spills out is that she starts kind of channeling the voices of the women who have been close to her in her life. And so she's speaking through her, they're speaking and letting people know how unhappy they are with the situations they've had to put up with in their life as a result of the tight constraints around women in South Korean society. So really interesting way of doing this. So she's basically having a breakdown. And then from that point, the book is written as a case study, and it sort of is outlining events of her life from when she's born right through to the current day. And as part of the passage through her life, you also get a look at her grandmother's life, her mother's life, the lives of her friends, her sister. So you get a bit more of a well-rounded view of how things have been changing across generations, but also how a lot of them are stubbornly kind of staying the same. Yeah,
it sounds as though it's a really universal story.
It is. I think it is. Interesting thing about South Korea is it's an extremely modern society in many, many ways, with a really highly educated populace. But the society itself is still very, very patriarchal. South Korea has the largest gender wage gap in the Western world. It's 64 cents to the dollar for women's
heavens.
Pay.
Very, yes.
Yeah. And there's a much lower chances of career progression. Certainly when if you take time off to go and have kids, then you're very unlikely to come back into the workforce full time. And there's actually lots of structures around both in the domestic sphere and also in the professional sphere that sort of serve to keep women in a really constrained sort of narrow channel in their lives.
Yes. So it's quite quite an asymmetry there, really, isn't there, between the sort of, because there's such a modern,
That's right.
I'm doing quotes in my head or in my with my hands, but and technologically advanced, and the libraries are everywhere, and you know.
That's right.
Yeah, and yet you've got this other side of life as well.
That's right. And women are going through the education system and getting a fantastic education, but they're not really able to use it, so much less likely to become managers in a society. And as I said, there's a low expectation on women in the workplace, because the expectation is that just about everybody is going to go off, have children and never come back.
So it
makes it really, really difficult. The writing style is really interesting. This is a really short book. It's less than 200 pages. And the writing style is very blunt and matter of fact. So it's basically like, this is how it is. And it's interspersed. It's a sort of interesting blend of fact and fiction. It's got some lots of referencing in there with facts and stats about Korean women's lives, so official stats. And the effect of that sort of writing style has this, because it has got that sort of, this is how it is, but then at the same time you're also getting these little frustrated asides with conversations from the women in the book with each other around issues that are going on. So there's this sort of muzzled mutiny going on.
Wow. Oh, it sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. Some of the statistics and some of the stories in the book are quite confronting. Sexual harassment is really prevalent over there, and it's really minimised and often goes unpunished. So, yeah, there's some really frustrating situations in here. But also you get a strong sense of the strengths of the women there and the ways that they try to kick against the pricks, if you can say.
Yeah, and that sort of resilience is often what comes through quite strongly, I guess, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right. Interestingly, South Korea has a really, they've got a real history of change through protest, so I actually hold out great hope for South Korea and its women. They managed to bring down the country's dictatorship in 1987 with protests. And
I can remember that, actually.
Yeah. And there was demonstrations in 2016, and that led to the impeachment of the president.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there's a strong, there is a strong sense of change, but I think perhaps the change for women will come more slowly because they've been in it for so long.
So go figure. They're the last ones to get on the bus.
Yeah. But I think, you know, they're starting to get on strongly. Despite there's a lot of going on in there.
Yes. Oh, how interesting. I'm going to look out for that. And because there are other Korean authors that are sort of writing along those lines.
Yes, absolutely. One that you might want to check out is Han Kang, the vegetarian. She's got a few that have, Human Acts is another one of hers. Kyun Suk Shin, Please Look After Mother, really interesting. And one that I just read recently as well, Francis Cha's If I Had Your Face, which looks at expectations of beauty around plastic surgery, which is extremely high in South Korea, and around the low wages and limited choices and how women sort of try to navigate that with their lives.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, oh, that sounds awesome. Thanks for those recommendations.
No worries.
Something to look forward to. Now, speaking of women and perhaps the expectations around their lives and that sort of thing, I've been reading this fantastic memoir this week, and it's called Uncanny Valley, a memoir, and it's by a woman called Anna Wiener, and she's an American writer, young-ish, she's a millennial, and I'm just loving my millennial writers at the
Absolutely.
Moment. It's great.
Very honest, eh?
Yeah, and we're in good hands, I think. Writing's in good hands. So, and Uncanny Valley, it's available in both hard copy and in e versions through Overdrive, so that's good. And when I started reading this, I was reminded a little bit of the book you were talking about last time we got together, and that's the one called Days of Distraction by Alexandra Chang.
Oh, yes.
Her memoir. Because it's about working in Silicon Valley amongst, you know, the sort of nerdy bro culture that you've got there, working for people like Google and Facebook, you know, all the big tech companies and the big startups that are all happening around us and making huge amounts of money. And so this this young woman, she's really well educated and she's got a good degree. It's been working kind of like an intern for a publishing company in New York, and has the idea of escaping over the continent to San Francisco.
Right.
And gets the opportunity to work in a tech startup. You know, what could possibly go wrong? It sounds amazing. And she's thinking that, because it's all run by young people, surely you'll escape the sort of misogyny that is all everywhere in our society, and the Me Too movement, all of that sort of thing. None of that will apply. But she kind of finds out that she lands in misogyny version 2.0. So you've got all these, not that many, unfortunately, but highly qualified young women. And even though they're earning megabucks, they're essentially being treated like handmaidens.
Oh, great.
And so there's a lot of sort of frustration and... I know I'm making it sound a bit depressing, but it's really not. It's so well written, and she's witty and she's clever. Like so much of the millennial writing, as we're discovering, it's really honest, as you were saying, it's really fresh, and it's got quite a sort of vigour about it. Something, I don't know that I'm explaining it that well.
No, it sounds great.
But also, it's very interesting because she describes really well how ordinary people have been priced out of the housing market in places like San Francisco and Oakland, California.
Because of the big influx of new tech.
The new tech and this massive wealth that's coming in. So that's kind of... sad too. And she talks about, I mean, you see it happening here too, but she first rents a room in a house in the Mission area of San Francisco, which is where it was always quite an ethnic neighborhood, and then it was bohemian and all this sort of stuff, but now it's just so gentrified, and it's almost like everyone's being sold this a lie, basically. So it's, but I'd highly recommend it.
Sounds excellent. Yeah.
Now I do need to come to my curve, if that's okay.
Please go into your curve,
Alison, the curve crusher. Because the title "Uncanny Valley" is actually very clever. Because in Uncanny Valley, you probably know this. I think I've discovered something.
No, go for it.
It's a mathematical concept, and sort of maths/ sociology concept, and it's got a beautiful curve. I love a good curve, and then there's a massive dip. But it describes how people are human beings are really attracted to robots until they're not. So I guess it's like we think, Silicon Valley, it's going to be the best thing ever until we discover it's not.
You get right into it, keep really up close.
So
that sounds excellent.
But highly recommended. It's a good one.
It sounds really, really good. I've been reading a memoir as well this week. This one's probably the opposite end of the spectrum. So this one's set in the UK. It's called Low Born, Growing Up, Getting Away and Returning to Britain's Poorest Towns. And it's by Kerry Hudson. So Kerry was, she grew up in extreme poverty in the UK. Her childhood was sort of full of transients, and her mum struggled with drug and alcohol addiction, and part of that meant that they were constantly shifting from town to town, from Aberdeen all the way down through Norwich and different areas of the UK, never really settling in one place long enough to put roots down. And when we join her in this book, it's 20 years on, and she's now a published author. So Kerry's a published author, but she actually feels as if she's a fraud hiding in plain sight. She's got all this background of trauma and poverty, but in the literary world, which obviously in the UK particularly, it's pretty elite, and there's a lot of money involved. So she's sort of walking in this world and feeling like... like she's a fraud, basically.
Imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome, and she's sort of part of her childhood trauma is resulting in panic attacks and anxiety and so on. Anyway, she gets a contract to write. She decides she wants to sort of explore her past a bit more and explore how she got where she was. So she gets a contract to write a book about her childhood, and as part of the research, she travels back to all of the different places that she'd lived in childhood. She wanted to see how they looked from her perspective as an adult, as a person who is now kind of sitting pretty firmly in the middle class, or and see what's changed in that time, and also whether she can find out a bit more about why her life was the way it was, really. So she starts this process of visiting these towns, and while she's visiting them, she manages to uncover some secrets about her childhood that she wasn't aware of. She always had all these unanswered questions about why they moved at that time from that place, how this particular person, for instance, her mum had a few different boyfriends at different places, and because her mum was poor and struggling, you know, there was a sort of reliance on boyfriends coming in and helping, but that also put her in a compromising position, and therefore the children as well. So she manages to uncover some family secrets, and one of the sad things about the book is that because of the relationship that she has with her mum, they're basically estranged. She's basically decided to cut the cord with her mum because she's experienced so much trauma in her past. Yeah, so it's a really personal account. It looks at how the policy decisions that were made at the time when she was growing up affected her family's position. And she also looks at the personal accounts of how interactions with different people had different effects. So, you know, whether she was bullied or kind of put down by people, and then the times when she was brought up by people, by teachers. She actually mentions librarians.
Hopefully,
and social workers
come out looking pretty good.
She was very she was very complimentary about libraries and how they helped in her life.
It's sad, isn't it, to think that a life can be reduced to, I'm just sort of thinking of a series of transactions. It's thinking about, like, with the mother's relationships, and then even the government policy often looks at at families and real lives just as a transaction
and a number. She sort of said about how the those interactions, as you say, could have massive effects up and down in her life, in terms of the turning points. So she had a big turning point, and it was to her benefit, but she still carries guilt about the fact that didn't necessarily pull up other members of her family.
Sounds like a good one.
Really good read.
Well, I've been reading one, and it's a bit of a segue, and it's one about so-called normal families, because, you know, what is a normal family?
True.
But this one, this was great. It's called A Nearly Normal Family, and it's a novel by a Swedish writer called M.T. Edvardsson, and he's one to watch, actually. So it's a Scandinavian crime thriller. It's so good. Set, as I said, in Sweden. It's a real slow-burning mystery that features an absolutely normal, I'm doing my quote marks again, normal everyday family. They're well-respected in their community. They're pretty, well, you know, reasonably well-off, comfortable. Everything's going well for them. And suddenly they find that their teenage daughter is the suspect in a murder. That's sort of shocked the small town that they live in. Now, it's absolutely riveting for a crime novel. The difference between a lot of crime novels that are quite popular, this one, it's not a slash and burn sort of book that's got shootouts and car chases and fight scenes and all that sort of stuff. It's not even that sort of full-on Scandinavian noir that some people might think of.
Sure.
Although it's definitely got a Scandinavian feel to the story. Things that are described so well are those cups of coffee, you know, makes me want to pour one now. And even riding, they ride their bikes everywhere because they're on fairly flat land.
So lucky.
Yeah. So it's got a Nordic sort of flavour to it that comes through like that.
Yeah.
And yet it's also universal. This sort of trauma mystery drama, it could happen to any family anywhere.
True.
So I probably won't say much more about it, but if you want a good read, a good mystery, to have a read of this.
Really compelling.
Some of the questions are, you know, how well do you know your own family members? You'll never look at your own family the same way. And, you know, what would you do to protect them? And what happens when your moral compass gets thrown off and everything goes south?
Interesting. Sounds like The Dinner by Herman Koch.
Oh,
Dutch book.
Right.
Yeah, which has some of those questions are definitely posed in that book too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's no, go for it.
Oh,
yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, while I'm on the topic of, I don't know what I'm on about, but of books that sort of absolutely blew me away, can I tell you about Scribe by Alison Hagi?
Please do.
This is so good. Oh, my God. It's like some sort of prophecy, basically, because get a load of this. So I'm hand-waving again, but it's set in the USA of the very near future.
Okay.
There's been a pandemic and a civil war, and most of the population has actually died because of the civil war and the
combo.
The combo, yeah. That sort of combo with a large Coke thrown in. And all the
shouldn't be laughing. Sorry.
Yeah, we shouldn't actually. No. And all the infrastructure's gone. There's no government, no hospitals, no communication technology. And we're in a survival of the fittest mode.
Ooh.
So does this sort of sound like anywhere we might be thinking of?
It does.
Could happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's kind of a bit like the Hunger Games part. Handmaid's Tale, but it's definitely different enough to be able to stand on its own merits. So, because in this dystopian America, anyone who can read and write has enormous power, basically because literacy has been lost throughout the war and the plague.
Fascinating.
So, and it's a very feudal society, and the part that the author writes about is in Virginia, West Virginia's Blue Ridge Mountains.
Oh, oh no, yes.
Don't get me started. I'm going to start singing. anyway, the woman who's the main character is just known as the Scribe. She doesn't actually have a name. And her literacy skills, and so she can trade them for essentials like firewood and food.
That's such an interesting concept.
Yeah, and so she writes letters on people's behalf, and then she'll travel to places and she'll read the letters to other people.
Mm.
So there's an element of her of confessional about it too, because people have to come and talk to her and confess their
or their deepest, darkest
sins, their desires, whatever.
Interesting.
So it's a short novel, quite dense, but highly recommended if anyone wants to read about dystopian
sounds
futures.
Really, really interesting.
But yeah, it's a bit chilling, especially in our current
close to the bone.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Hey, fascinating. That sounds like a great novel for the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So now you've got, I'm sure your TBR list is
still stacked. Still stacked. The next one on my list for TBR is a very short one, so this one is going to help me to bring that curve down. It's Before the Coffee Gets Cold by Toshikazu Kawaguchi. This is a little short novel. It's a little whimsical read set in Tokyo in a little cafe. And the cafe has a reputation for time travel.
Oh, wow.
So the idea is that if you come to this cafe and sit in a particular seat at a particular table, you will be able to time travel back to a time that has been bothering you. When you get there, however, you have to stay in that seat, and the people that you meet are only people who have ever been to that cafe, and you will not be able to change the past. Really, the major benefit is that you might be able to reconcile yourself to what happened with that person. Yes.
That sounds so good. I was thinking you were going to say, and when you sit down in the cafe, a cat will come and sit on your lap.
There are a lot of cats in Japanese fiction, aren't there? They're featuring all over the place.
The cat cafe.
That's true. Yes. That's true. They have owl cafes too. They have all sorts of cafes over there.
Yeah.
And the idea of saying before the coffee gets cold, you have to have got yourself back to the present by the time the coffee, before the coffee gets cold. That's where that
comes from. Wonderful. Oh, I'm going to put that on my list as well.
So I think probably if you're one of those people who gets really hung up on the nuts and bolts of time travel, this one may not be for you. There's probably glaring holes. For me, it doesn't bother me whatsoever. I'm quite happy to just take the trip.
Yes, I don't know anything about time travel, so I probably just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. Hey, and last night I just picked up my copy that I've been waiting for a while of White Fragility. And that's the one by Robin DiAngelo. Was published a couple of years ago, but it's absolutely required reading now, I think, for anyone that's wanting to stay abreast of what's happening in the world with the Black Lives Matter movement and
absolutely
huge social change.
Yeah, that's shot to the top of the bestseller lists, isn't it?
Yes.
Bestseller lists. And, the library holds queues as well. Yes, it's very, very popular.
Yeah, but we've got it in hard copy and e-book as well. So,
good to know.
Yeah, I'd advise anyone to put their name down for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't wait
to
get into that. Yeah.
Awesome.
And now, we had some news as well, didn't we, in the library, about 10 million.
Yeah, that's right. It's been a big week for Auckland Libraries and e-books. So on Sunday, the 2nd of August, just before 5 p.m, we hit a milestone for Overdrive of the 10 millionth e-book loaned during Auckland Libraries' partnership with Overdrive.
That's fantastic, because it's a huge amount, isn't it?
It's a huge number. So we hit 5 million just 2 years ago in 2018.
Right.
So it really speaks to the popularity of e-books and the rising popularity, particularly during lockdown, of course.
Yes.
We saw a massive bump of people getting into e-books. The 10 millionth title was The Warmth of Other Suns, The Epic Story of America's Great Migration by Isabel Wilkerson. And this is a book that really ties in with Black Lives Matter as well, because it tells the history of African Americans leaving the South, looking for opportunities in the North between 1920 and 1940s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, how appropriate. Isn't that a really appropriate title?
It is. It's really a really good title for the year. It's, it really shows an area of interest that Auckland Library's customers have been really flocking to.
They really have, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, cool. So that's a really good news story.
Yeah, it's really fabulous. So, yeah, if you haven't already jumped on the e-reading bandwagon and you want to give it a go, jump in.
Yeah. Wonderful. I'm really happy to hear that. So, and congratulations to the customer.
Absolutely.
Well done them.
And thanks to all of our Auckland Library's customers who have helped us get to that milestone.
Yeah, that's huge, isn't it? Well, look, I think we've covered quite a bit of material today, haven't we? Lots to read, lots to think about.
Oh,
and
always.
Lots of curves to crush, which I always like. So to our listeners, just a reminder that the books mentioned on the show today, they'll be listed on our blog, and that sits on the Auckland Library's website. And all of this can be accessed via the Planet FM website, and both addresses are coming up as part of our closing music. So until next time, folks, happy reading. Haerera, ka kite anō. Yeah.
you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond.